I need some encouragement this morning. I need to air some dirty laundry. Yesterday, those of you who don't know, I have a two-year-old and a four-year-old. Actually, we have a two-year-old and a four-year-old. Do you still claim them today? Barely. I had a funeral yesterday morning and had some church work that I need to finish up on yesterday after lunch. And so when I got home at about 3, my wife had that look. You know the look. The look that says, should I ask if they're both still living? You know, or if I'm going to live, is that... You did, yes. And so we teamed up there for a little bit, kind of, you know, in a wrestling match. Sometimes when they tag up, they both stay in the ring for a little bit. And so we teamed up there for a little bit, got them down for their nap. And she said, I got to get out of the house. And I was like, that's fine. You go. And she did. And she didn't come back. I was in bed. By the time she got back, she was gone. And she had some stuff that she had been wanting to do through the week, and it gave her an opportunity to do that. And so then I was there with a fresh layer of patience, and I don't know what their deal was yesterday. And they just wouldn't listen, no matter what we did. We talked to them. We sat them on timeout, and they're, no, you're on timeout. No, you're on time. Okay, you're going to lose an animal. You're going to lose stuffed animals. You lost all your stuffed animals. They're in their bed with nothing but a blanket. They even lost their pillows for nap time. And I'm thinking, these kids, they and you know, we're in the midst of reading a book to try and learn some new things about discipline. And of course, you know, we do spank our children, but it's a last resort. And we got to the last resort. And there's just something that happens inside a parent when you spank your child and they laugh at you. And so I got the look. And this happened yesterday. And one, we're looking forward to our first major family vacation this coming week. And this is how it's going to start. But then the other thing that runs through my mind is, I'm preaching a message on parenting tomorrow. How ironic. I am majorly underqualified this morning to bring such a message. But the good news is that this message from its inception did not come from my wisdom or my experience, but it came from God's wisdom and God's experience. So I think it's something we can take with us. Today's subject is it's a tough subject. It's in a whole series. The whole series is tough. The only easy message we had was the first message in the series, just to get us started. The subject is good kids gone bad. We got a chance to see some good kids gone good up here on the stage, leading us in worship. Kids to some of you, but what happens? What happens when a good kid goes bad? I want to start off with some foundational understandings of responsibilities in the house. I want you guys to write this down. And if you're a single parent, write the parent is. If you're a joint parent, two parents in the same house together there, I want you to write the parents are in those first two blanks. The parent is, or the parents are, responsible for loving, training, disciplining, teaching, encouraging the children. That's what you as a parent are responsible for. The child is responsible for his or her adult life choices. It's kind of the foundation we're going to build off of today. Because it's really tough, because good parents can produce bad kids, and bad parents can produce good kids, or good parents can produce good kids, bad kids can produce. And we see this, and not just in the world around us, but even in our Bibles. In the book of 1 Kings, starting in chapter 12, going to 2 Kings chapter 8, we see a lineage of five different generations. And what happens, we see Rehoboam, which was Solomon's son. He was a bad dad. He was a bad king. He was a bad dad. He was a lousy example for his son. And the inevitable, you know, what we would expect to happen, happened. His son was a bad son, Abijah. He grew up. He became a bad king for Judea. And he was a bad dad. Another lousy example. But look what happened. He produced a good son, Asa. Now, wait a minute, how'd that happen? I thought bad dad made a bad child. But here's a bad dad that made a good child. Well, it's because a child is responsible for their adult lifestyle choices, their adult life choices. Now, Asa goes on. I have the remnants of poor Jason's string here. Now, Asa turns out to be a good dad, and he has a good child, Jehoshaphat. He was a good son. Now, Jehoshaphat grows up, and he's a good king, good man, assuming a good father, good dad, and he ends up having a bad son, Jehoram. So we see in just these five generations, these five father-son, or four rather, father-son relationships, you see every possible combination of bad dad, bad son, good son happening right here in our Bibles. As we witness this happen, that a bad dad can produce a bad son, that would make sense. Or a bad dad would produce a good son. That doesn't make sense, but it does when you understand that the child's adult life choices are their responsibility. A good kid can come from a bad upbringing. Some of you have come from that, and you have become a good kid. You have grown up good. Some of you came from good parents, and you are a good parent. Some of you came from good parents, and you're struggling, and you're not doing such a great job at being a good child of God. The whole mix there happens. So if good parents can have children that make bad choices, and bad parents can have children that make very wise choices, then why are we even having a message on parenting? Is parenting, does it count? Does it do any good? What good is it? Well, as parents, we have a responsibility. Our responsibility is, if you go back up to our first note that we took, our responsibility is to train, to discipline, to encourage, to equip our children so that they will have the best chance they can have at making good, wise choices. We're not responsible for their lifestyle choices as an adult, but we are responsible for doing all we can to give them the tools of making good choices. And there's a big difference between those two, and I think it's very important for us to understand on this subject today. So we do all we can as parents to give them what they need. Good children gone bad. Families growing. Families coping. So what does a parent do if they have a good kid that's gone bad? Parents with a wild 20-year-old or a wild 30-year-old, even a wild 40-year-old or 50-year-old, it's just off the hook. And they're just crazy, and they're not living a life that's going to be good for them or good for their family. What do you do as a parent in that situation? What about the parents that are here that still have children at home? What can you do to help try and prevent that? Or can you prevent it? What can we do? Well, to help get some answers to these questions, we're going to go to a story in Luke chapter 15. If you'd like to go on and turn to Luke chapter 15 in your Bibles, this is a story. I need my board for this one. We're going to have some fun. You guys love it when I bring my board out. That's good. This is a story where Jesus tells a parable about two sons. A man who has two sons. It's a story that's gotten the name the prodigal son. And we're going to change that name here in a little bit. But that's what a lot of you will know this story as, is the prodigal son. The story of the prodigal son. Well, he had one son. And he was the older son. We'll put him over here. You guys love my artwork. And we have the younger son. Okay, he's slightly smaller. Here, we'll help this out a little bit. There we go. He's the older son. He's got some facial hair. Oh, should do a little. A little mustache. He looks a little Hispanic with that mustache on there. A little Zorro. Anyway, but the story starts off with the younger son going to the father and saying, "Hey, Dad, I want all of the money that you're ever going to give me. I want my full inheritance. I want my share of the estate. I want my next 50 years worth of wages that I would make if I were going to stay and work with you. I'd like for half of the inheritance. I'd like for my share of the life insurance that I'm going to get when you die. I want that now. I want the dowry that you're going to use to bribe my father-in-law when I end up finding a bride. I want it all. I want everything that you're going to give me, and I want it now." And the father gives him this. So he gets all the money, and so he packs his bags. Draws bags here. He's got two of them. He's got a lot of stuff. Little handles, so it's easy to carry. So he packs his bags, and he heads out west to be a cowboy. He goes to Vegas. And he just blows all of this money on wild living. And you can hear the sounds of casinos and crowds talking and slot machines. And the smell of smoke lingers in the air. So let's put a stogie here in his hand. Woo! And he starts getting involved. And, of course, all the things that you'd really hope that your child wouldn't get involved in. Drinking. He's got a little bottle here of, put a big X on there if you can see it from there. And he starts hanging out with wild women. All right, wild women. And so we got a wild women over here, and got some wild, crazy hair, and got a little mini skirt. Because that's what they wear, these wild women. So we got another one. This one, she's got the wild, crazy hair. Woo, because I'm a wild woman. Girl's gone wild. We got in church. Can you believe it? So we got a few other little Sally up here, a little hairdo. And so he's in all these women. She's a redhead. He's in the smoking and the drinking and the drugs and the women and the wild living. And maybe, because when you're going down this road, maybe he starts playing in a rock and roll band. Because isn't that what they do when they get here? And he gets a hold of some big old boots, because that's what you do, right? You like my boots? And maybe he lets his hair kind of grow all kind of raggedy, and he just kind of gets nasty, and maybe starts, wearing makeup and playing in a band and drinking and all the women, and maybe he gets a tongue extension. Because, wait a minute, I just drew Gene Simmons of Kiss. And they call me Dr. Love. The one you're dreaming. Because he liked to rock and roll all night and party every day. That was the lifestyle that this younger son went and chased after. This represents what he went for. This was what he was involved in, this prodigal son, this wasteful son. But then something happened, ran out of money, and, she's not even wearing a skirt. I better put a skirt on her before she... There, she's in a bikini. Too bad, though, he lost her. Because you lose the money, you lose those type of girls. That's what they're into. And he lost the band. They broke up. The hair just fell out on top. No money for the booze. No money for the cigarettes or stogies. And maybe what he did was he started working at McDonald's. Or worse, maybe... Maybe what happened was he put a bucket in his hands here. He started cleaning the bathrooms at the casino, because he owed him money. Or maybe it was even worse than that. Maybe he ended up being the guy that has to clean the shoes at the bowling alley. Ew. Can you imagine that job? That's nasty. And he's working at the bowling alley after the midnight bowlers crowd is all left. And he's cleaning up the shoes. And he's looking in the trash can. And he sees a half-eaten piece of pizza and some nasty, cold, greasy cheese fries. And he's thinking, they don't look too dirty. And he's really that down on his luck. He's that hungry. He's that poor. He's that down that even looks appetizing to him. And he comes to his senses, Jesus tells in this story. And he remembers that my father's servants, they were never in need. They were never hungry. I'm going to go back to my father's house, not as a son, but just as a servant. Because at least there I'll be taken care of. At least there I'll get food. And so he prepares his spiel. And we know this spiel, don't we? We did it when we were kids. When you're in trouble and you know you're going to have to face the music, you write your little spiel in your head and you practice it because you want to get all the words just right and the inflection just right to try and get as much mercy and grace as you can get. And he goes to his dad. Now, as he's on his way to his dad sees him from far off. It means he was looking for him. And his dad goes running to him and throws his arms around him and welcomes him back. Before he even got a chance to get the words out of his mouth to share this spiel that he had given. That's the father. Now, the father says, hey, we got to throw a party because you're home now. And he's like, no, I'm done partying. He's like, no, a good party. We're going to throw a Jewish party. We're going to kill the goat. We're going to have roasted goat. We're going to have leg of lamb. We're going to have matzo ball soup. I mean, we're talking about a Jewish festival meal here. They're going to party Jewish style. And so they go back into the house and they start having a party. Now the oldest son comes in from work. He's been working at the father's business because he stayed home and he's kind of taken over CEO of the business and he works a lot of overtime. And so he's coming home from the dad's business, the dad's company. And he hears this music coming from the house as he's a little ways off. And he can tell it's party music and they're having a good time. And there's, you know, it's not a festival time, so it's not a normal Jewish festival. There's something going on here. So as he gets closer, he starts to get the aroma of the roasted goat and the leg of lamb and the matzo ball soup, and he smells that, and he understands that there's nice food at this party. What's going on here? As he gets closer, one of the servants comes running out to him and says, hey, your dad's throwing a party because your brother came home. Isn't that exciting? Not so exciting for him. He doesn't go in the party. He stays outside. And so the father comes out to him. And the father says, hey, come on inside. We're celebrating. Your brother came home. He's like, me? Why should I celebrate my loser brother coming home? Don't you remember he wasted all of your money? Don't you see what he did? And you're throwing a party for this guy? What about me? I stayed home. I worked overtime. I obeyed you, Dad. I did what you asked for me, Dad. Where's my party? When did I ever get a party for being the good son? Aren't I entitled to a party, Dad? Don't I deserve a party, Dad? And so in this story, Jesus paints a picture of the first son who is self-centered, self-righteous, unaccepting, unforgiving, judgmental, pious, arrogant. I just drew most of the people that go to church. So you have these two sons. And we need to put the dad on the board because this helps us to get things into perspective for the story. Yeah. Because the story's not just about the kids. In fact, a lot of times we call it the prodigal son. It's not really the prodigal son at all. It's actually the story of the prodigal father. Some of you are thinking, well, the father didn't go wayward. No, the word prodigal means extravagantly wasteful. And as we look at the way the father loves both of these boys, he's extravagantly wasteful. He is the prodigal father. The younger son didn't deserve the grace that his father gave to him in the story. He deserved to stay in the pit of pigs. That was Jesus' version, that he went and he was working for this guy and taking care of his pigs. And he saw the slop that the pigs were eating. And he thought, you know what? If I could just eat the slop that the pigs are eating. And that was the equivalent to the cold, half-eaten pizza and greasy cheese fries in our modern-day equivalent of the story. He deserved to stay there because of what he did, because of his choices, because of his actions. But what did God do? What did the father in the story do? Well, he loved him in such a way that by the world's eyes would have looked like it was wastefully extravagant or extravagantly wasteful. Look at how he gives. Look at all he gives to people who squander the gifts that he gives, who takes what God gives and just wastes it and blows it. Look at how God loves the self-righteous, the pious, the arrogant. Look at how God loves us, all of us in between. I think these two children really represent kind of the gulf that we find ourselves in. Some of us are a little closer this side. Some of us are a little closer this side. Boy, the goal would just be to be right in the middle and have the repentant heart of the sinner and have the obedient mind of the older son. But rarely we find ourselves in those places. And we see ourselves, and we see ourselves between these two. And we see this father in this story and how he loves and how he's the perfect parent to these two children, one who's a sinner and one who's self-centered, one who's a free spirit, one who's judgmental, one who's rebellious and the other who's self-righteous, one who is wild and irresponsible and the other who is whiny and bitter. In this parable, it is clear that Jesus is trying to teach us that God is the Father. So I have to ask this question on our subject today. Did this father fail? Did God fail as a parent in the story? Look at his kids. If we were going to measure his parenting skills based on the decisions that his kids made, based on the lifestyles that they had, then we would look at this father and we would say, that father is a failure. And I think a lot of the times we do the same thing to ourselves as parents. I can't call him a failure because I know that's God, and God doesn't fail. He's perfect. I want you to write this down. This is going to be very important for us. God is a perfect parent with imperfect children. God is an imperfect parent a perfect parent with imperfect children. Look at us, all of us in between. We're all God's children. I'm nowhere near perfect. I definitely don't make God look good as a parent at times. Our children are responsible for their own adult choices. So what can we do as parents? Well, we go back to this story and we take a look at God, the parent in this story. How did he act with his kids in the house? How did he act after his kids had left the house? What can we take from that and say, I want my life to be like God, who is the ultimate parent? Well, if you haven't already turned there, I'm going to catch up with you if you've already gotten there. Luke chapter 15, where this story lies. And I'm only going to bring a couple illustrations from the story on some of these things we're going to draw out. My challenge to you is this afternoon or sometime maybe tomorrow during the holiday that you sit down with this story and your notes from the bulletin. And I want you to go through and I want you to pick out the different pieces that fall under these three different things that we're going to be looking at as how God is the perfect parent. One of the things we see from God is that God is he consistently gives quality, unconditional love. That's what God does. Look in verse 20, and this is this verse I'm kind of jumping around in the story a little bit. In verse 20, it's when the son comes back, when the prodigal son, when the youngest son comes back to the father. I've already shared with you what happens, but I want you to read it here. It says, so when he got up, talking about the son, and went to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. You talk about quality, unconditional love. And it's throughout the story. It's just that's one verse that really grabs me and says, man, that's good stuff. Quality, unconditional love. God is the example to us as his children and to us as parents to look up to. But as he is a parent, we look at him and he gave his children an example to follow in his life. And in the story too, we see this back up in verse 17. This is a very small piece of the story. It's after the son, it's when the son comes to his senses and he's in the pig slop and he's thinking, man, my stomach's growling and I could just eat what the pigs are eating. I'm that hungry. And he realizes this isn't right. And so he comes to his senses, and look at what happens. He says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. Some of you are, what does that have to do with anything? You know very well that your children watch everything you do. This son had watched how his dad treated his workers, his servants even. He had watched that. He saw his dad's character, his dad's integrity, his dad's fairness, his dad's love towards even his servants. And he watched that. Everything you do as a parent, everything you do as an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent, those kids are watching. Not just the times when you're one-on-one looking for instructions and teaching them a lesson, but just when you're interacting with everybody, with other people. And so that's so important, and we need to understand that. We need to be an example for them in everything we do, because that's what God has done for us. He's shown us. He's been an example for us as parents. In addition to giving quality, unconditional love and giving an example to follow, the father's actions are always appropriate. Always. You know, you think back to the beginning of the story when the son asks for his money. The father gives it to him, lets him go on his way. He's an adult. He can make those choices. His actions were appropriate. Because the father in the story is God, you can only assume that all through their rearing that his actions were always appropriate. I know for us, his actions are always appropriate. Whether or not it's grace and love when we need it, or the hard type of love, the tough love, the discipline we get from him. It's all because he loves us and he's our father. Take a look down at verse 21. This is when the son gets a chance to share his spiel. He says, the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. His actions are appropriate towards his son. And throughout the story, you can see that, how he treats the older son. His actions are appropriate there, but this is kind of a highlight of the story and where his actions. He gave him the ring, the family ring, said, hey, you're not a servant, bud. You're my son. Come back in the household. He gave him a robe to cover up his nakedness. He gave him shoes for his feet. Servants didn't wear shoes. Family wore shoes. His actions were always appropriate. So since God is the ultimate example for us as parents, John Maxwell gives some very simple questions in one of his parenting books. And it's really what a lot of this funnels down to. And it's the last thing I'm going to leave you with to be able to take something home. And they're really good questions to ask yourself as a parent. If you have children that have already grown up, they've left the house, then you can ask yourself these things, evaluate what you've done, and then how you can continue doing these things. And if maybe you didn't do them so great as a parent when they were in your house, you still have a chance to be a better parent now. It's a different realm because it's more of a peer versus peer type deal, but you're still their mom, you're still their dad, and you can still bring out these three questions. If you're a parent and you have children in your house, or you're a new parent that's going to have children in your house, these questions are going to be so important for you to ask yourself. And they're based off the illustration of what we saw in God in this story. And it's just simply, have I given my children quality unconditional love? Second question is, have I given them a good example to follow? The third question is, have my actions been appropriate toward them? You know, and we're not going to be perfect parents. I'm never going to be God, you know, to my kids. I can't be that. But I can sure take these questions and I can evaluate my life and I can measure my life against the way that God is a parent. And I can ask myself, you know, am I doing these things? Am I loving my kids the way I should be loving them? Am I the example that I should be to them? Are my actions toward them appropriate? And if I come across that on a certain week or a certain day and my answer is no to one of those, I have a chance to change. I have a chance to do something different. If your kids have already left and you're answering these questions saying, you know what, I haven't been the best. I wasn't the best example for them when they were under my roof. You can change and be a good example for them. There was a man who had a really bad relationship with his father. Under today's definition, it would have been considered an abusive relationship, physically, emotionally. During that time, it was more considered just par for the course, because that's how children were treated by certain parents. When this boy got to the age of 17, he just couldn't wait to get out of the house. He graduated 17 and got his dad to sign the waiver so he could join the Navy. Went in the Navy and did not care if he lived or died. Went in with a death wish. Just didn't care. Was into drugs and alcohol and women and was around biker gangs. And story after story of different times when this man should have died or could have died because of the situations he had put himself in. Well, that man met a woman and she kind of helped straighten him out a little bit. That happens. He had two children. His son went on to Bible college after finding Jesus in high school. And it was his sophomore year in Bible college that this man, this boy's father, was baptized into Christ. That man's my dad. My grandma prayed for him every day. You talk about a prodigal son. He was in his 40s when he accepted Christ. And my grandma had prayed for him every day since he was born. 40 years of prayers, parents. He got a chance to restore his relationship with his father before his father passed away. Years before his father passed away. So it just wasn't a deathbed restoration. I share that story because if you'd sit down with my dad, some of the stories he would share, he was in some crazy stuff. And he, at this point in his life, accredits the times when his life was spared, the times when his life was saved in places where he should. I mean, he's got stories where he jumped in the back of a pickup truck and someone gave him an iron bar and someone else had a chain. Guys had knives and said, "What's this for?" And he said, "You're going to need it." Well, something happened on the way and they didn't get a chance to get to the gang fight and so he didn't partake. Story after story after story like that. And now today, after seeing things that he sees now, he accredits every one of those things to his mother's prayers. Her prayers were answered by God and he was kept safe. Don't give up, parents. Don't give up. Because that mother's grandparent, or that mother's prayers, is the reason why I'm here. Don't give up, parents. Don't give up. Pray for your prodigal children. Show them love. Give them an example. And make sure your actions are appropriate to them, so that they may see God in your parenting.